Kale, welcome to the show. How you doing?
Hey, good. First, thanks for having me, guys. I trust it's fine to see everyone up there doing well and staying healthy amid this craziness in the world today.
Yeah, well, you know what? We're doing as good as we can. We've kind of gotten used to the new regime. We're broadcasting live at the Velvet Dungeon in my basement, so it's a lot of fun. I want to get to the hockey and stuff, but I had to somebody reach out to me, a close acquaintance of yours, can't reveal my source, who said you were a pretty good BMX bike rider as well. So, you know, BMX riding and hockey were kind of two of your things growing up. How often did you race BMX bikes, and how serious was it?
It's funny you brought that up. Not many people knew of that being a big part of my past. And I started that, I was in fourth grade, however old I would have been, and did it seriously until I was 17. And that was my last year. And I actually turned pro that year, but it worked great because when hockey was over, I raced all summer, primarily all over Western Canada, into the States a little bit. But I took it very seriously. I was sponsored. I think the best I did was maybe top five in Canada. And then even when I turned pro the last year, I won a little bit of money. So that was really cool. But it was great. I mean, I thought it was cool, too, from being on a team sport all winter to then being on, you know, doing it myself on a BMX bike where, you know, if I didn't win, it was my fault. You know what I mean? Versus being on a team if someone doesn't play well or the goalie lets a soft one in. So I thought that was an interesting dynamic. But too, from the, you know, the training aspect, this is long before anyone ever trained or worked out, I think, in the summer when they were playing hockey. So.
Well, Hulser, I'm wondering, because you're a big guy, and even growing up, you must have been, you know, bigger than their average, you know, whatever, 10, 12, 15, 16-year-old. So, weren't you a bit big, oversized for BMX? Because it seems to me those guys are all pretty small.
Yeah, I think, you know, I actually have my race bike that I rode my last race on here. And I can't imagine. I don't think I have grown much since I was 17. So, yeah, I was one of the bigger guys. But I don't know. I was pretty successful. I think now in trying to race or ride that bike, I'd end up killing myself. So I think maybe I was lucky to get through the years of racing without any serious injury. But at one point, honestly, I laugh now thinking I wanted to quit hockey and just be a BMXer.
Well, I could see why. Now, I've been told that your nickname when you were younger was Lizzie, but now they don't call you that anymore. What was that reference from?
I got an older brother. So older brothers, I think it's just their innate ability to try and find something to just annoy the heck out of you. And so my brother gave me that handle at a young age because he said I had lizard eyes. So clearly I didn't enjoy that a whole lot, and that didn't transfer over into the hockey. The hockey nickname became Chopper, that you know, stuck to this day, and that was more from my style in front of the net, I guess, just chopping guys down.
Yeah, you weren't very friendly out there, that's for sure. I'm joined by Kale Hulser, longtime NHLer. And Hulser, I'm glad you brought up the eyes, because, you know, I think that there's, you know, maybe not so much now, but, you know, 10, 15, 20 years ago, intimidation was a big part. And I think your eyes are actually set about a half inch further back in your skull than the average human being. And they're very, it's dark. Like, I wonder if you put dark eyeliner, because your eyes, when you looked at you, like, you could tell that this wasn't, you know, we weren't here for a picnic. And you must have got a lot of extra room because of the intensity in those eyes and that dark and how they were set back.
You know, I don't look, I've got the dark circles under my eyes, and of course, you know, when we're playing hockey all winter, everyone, you know, looks like a vampire. You're stark white, your skin, and then with the dark eyes that are set back. But in terms of, you know, for me, look, I was not a very skilled guy, so my focus was laser focused on, look, I gotta do my job. Some guys said I was too serious, but that was that intensity that came out. And it's funny. So, you know, here we're all working from home. Now, this was just yesterday. I'm in a work Zoom call, and I was leaning forward, looking at the computer to make, you know, my eyes aren't as good. So I'm looking, leaning forward to see if I'm actually on the call. And one of the guys that worked with the Coyotes back to when I still played goes, oh my God, he goes, you look so intense. So I guess I still have that. But, oh yeah, that's just who I am, I guess. I hope I don't scare anyone away nowadays.
Cale Hulse joins us. So, Cale, you played in the Alberta Junior Hockey League at 17, and then you, you at 18 years of age, you went to the Winter Hawks. So there's a lot of guys who, you know, at 16 or 17 go, and clearly was the right path for you. Why did you choose to go to the AJHL route at 17 rather than the Dub right away?
You know, that's a great question. I think a lot of people didn't realize. So when I was 16, all my relatives live in Moose Jaw. So, you know, again, remember back then, there was no summer hockey. I don't even think rollerblades were invented. So I had the opportunity to go to the Moose Jaw Warriors rookie camp. And it was just looked at as, hey, this is me being on the ice for a week because I wanted to go home and try and make the midget AAA team. Well, I turned out they wanted me to stay and play as a 16-year-old. And I just wasn't ready. It didn't appeal to me at all. I wanted to go home and graduate high school with my buddies. That was a big thing and try and play midget AAA. And then having a good year in midget, things unfolded perfectly for me where my coach, Garth Malarchuk, I think he was a scout for either the Calgary Flames or the Maple Leafs at that time. So I had a good year at 16 in AAA. The next year, the AJ, they expanded and the Calgary Royals became a team. So Garth got that coaching job. So it worked perfect for me instead of playing another year midget to play with him. And then both avenues would have been open, whether I wanted to go to college or play in the Western League. And it was during that year I started getting some offers and letters from some U.S. schools. But then, too, Moose Jaw was not happy with me not wanting to play for them. So they traded my rights to Portland. So things really unfolded. So I had a good year playing Tier 2 with the Royals. And then Portland wanted me, and, you know, they flew me down and showed me around and wanted me to stay and play that following season with them. And so, you know, clearly I knew that was my better route that suited my game versus trying to go to college.
Yeah, at Portland, I mean, it seems like they've been a good organization forever. You know, you had Ken Hodge as your coach and Brent Peterson is a co-coach. Yeah. So that first year, I mean, you guys had some good players. I mean, a lot of guys that went on to the NHL. Was it automatically for you a pretty easy step up there with your size and the type of game you played?
Not really. I think, you know, I was still trying to figure out, you know, think of just any young boy, literally, you know, growing and going through, okay, you've just graduated high school. I didn't know who I was or what I was trying to become. And this opportunity came to go to a different country in a big city and play hockey. And that was, you know, that was the NHL to me at that point. If I didn't go any further, the experience was amazing. You know, and I had scrapped a little bit playing Tier 2 and knew that was clearly the game I had to play. And it just, you know, I was lucky, I think, with the coaching staff, the support group. I had a great billet family. And, you know, we had a good team and a good room, good group of guys. And, you know, you just kind of find your way. And, again, with having good coaches and mentors there, you know, I knew, okay, if I want to give myself a chance, I got to play this way. And that's what the Western League was back there. So I knew I was in the right place, and it was just up to me to put the work in.
Cale Hulse joins us. And, Cale, you mentioned that, you know, I wasn't that skilled of a guy, but you look at your second year in the WHL at 19 years of age, you're second, I think, second or third on defense and points. You know, you're averaging a half a point a game, plus you had 284 PIMs. So it wasn't just like you were only fighting. You were still contributing. You get a point every second game in junior as a defenseman. That's pretty good.
Well, I think if you beat everyone up twice, you get a little more room. I could play, you know, respect to a degree I could play. I was very aware, though, that I was not going to be out there quarterback in the power play. Now, I could shoot the puck. I had a good understanding of the game. But, you know, again, too, intimidation, Strud, you mentioned, that was a big part of the game. And you do make room for yourself, you know, and you take pride in that. And it wasn't just me. We had a tough team. So there might have been, you know, games and days where teams maybe weren't feeling it when they were playing us, and that could have attributed to, you know, a few of those points as well.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure there were. I remember, so you left to go on to pro, and I came into Kamloops. And I remember that the guys, they talked about Cale House and Johnny Baduk, like, they were like murderers row. And they were so happy you guys were gone. And they're like, do you think you could fight like him? I'm like, I don't know. I've never really been in a fight before. And I was howling. I didn't even know you two, but I was so happy you guys were gone. Just cause, like, Tyson Nash talked about you guys. Like, there was a sign one time that says, give blood, fight Hulse. And we were all so scared. I'm like, oh my God, who are these guys? And I got to play against guys in NHL. I'm like, oh my God, these guys are killers. You know, like, it's funny how that in junior, I think, that especially at that time, the legend carries on for a long time and spreads quickly around the Western Hockey League.
Well, and again, you know, think of, you know, we're all trying to be big, tough guys. You're 16, 17, 18 years old. You know, again, you don't even really know who you are. You're trying to grow. I mean, no one has got three whiskers on their face. And, you know, so when someone does come through and does make some noise or, you know, and again, it's funny, those stories are still being told. So it is, you have to laugh. But then again, you put yourself back in that place.
Sure.
And it's no different even your first couple of years pro. You're looking at the stat sheet. Hey, what's the story on this guy? He had 300 minutes in junior. He must be tough. Like, that's just how we were all trying to make a name for ourselves.
Cale Hulse joins us in story time today, a longtime NHLer. And Cale, so you're in Portland for 2 years. You get drafted by the New Jersey Devils after your first season. You know, and the Devils were a pretty good organization back then. You got Niedermeyer and Stevens and Marty Brodeur. Tell me about your first camp with the Devils in 93-94.
That was probably the biggest eye-opening experience of my hockey career, I think. You know, I had one good year in junior, pretty good year my first year. Felt pretty good about myself going to the draft. I was unsure if I wanted to go and to be there. And turns out, you know, my family and I, we went, and it was an amazing experience. And, you know, I wish we had all the technology back then that we do now. I would have loved to have seen footage of me, what I call the workout back then. Because when I went to that first camp in Jersey, I mean, they were just on the verge of turning into that machine they became, you know, in the mid-90s. They won that first cup. You know, you mentioned Needs and Stevens, Tommy Abeline, Bruce Driver, Ken Danico. Like, a grenade would have had to gone off in the locker room to have a chance at making that club. But for me, the big takeaway was, you know, I'm not even close to being ready for this level. Like, not even close. We had those preseason games and the Rangers would come in and, you know, you see all these guys and they're just looking like they want to rip your head off. And you got to play and it's faster and the guys are stronger. And so that was a huge wake-up call. And then I just, you know, I was able to stay focused when I went back, you know, and I think it's because you hear stories of guys that go to a pro camp and they think they're better than they are and they don't want to put the work in. Well, I wanted to make sure that, you know, I was a good role model and came back and worked harder than I did the year before. And plus, again, our team was better. So it just worked really well. It was a great experience. Like I said, a big eye-opening experience for me to recognize there was a lot of work left to be done.
So you went back to junior, then you come and you turn pro. It's your 20-year-old season. You turn pro, and you're going on the Albany River Rats. Robbie Fatorik's your head coach. And you've got Christoph Oliwa, Reed Simpson, Gordy Kinnear, Dean Malcock, Matt Rutschke. Like, my goodness, you guys had a tough squad.
Yeah, we did. And it was a good thing we did, too, because we played played Adirondack. Honestly, it seems like we played those guys 10 times. And so, you know, and again, back then, that's when a lot of teams, you know, they had no veteran rules. So you could play someone that had been playing pro hockey for 12 years or guys that were in the NHL that were tough guys, you know, and you're skating around going, holy geez, I hope he doesn't, you know, call my name. And so that, again, it was almost that junior experience all over again. And it was kind of like a Slapshot experience, the movie Slapshot. I remember, because there's no school to go to, you're making a few bucks after practice, what do you want to do? And there was the nearest place across the street from Knickerbocker Arena was a bar. And we sat in there and had lunch and belly up at the bar, and guys are starting to drink beer. And I was just like, well, like, this can't be, is this normal? Is this what we do now? And so, again, you go through a lot. I didn't turn 20 till November. Yeah. So here I am playing pro hockey. I'm 19, going through camp, starting the exhibition and playing games. But, yeah, again, very lucky. Awesome, awesome coach. Robbie Fatorik, you know, you hear stories about every coach and different people like him, hate him, whatever. He was played a pivotal role in making me a pro and having me understand what it took to not only be a pro and prepare, but, to again, to make it to the NHL.
Of course, a long time NHLer, and he talked about his first training camp with the New Jersey Devils, and then when he outlined their blue line, I can understand it may be a little difficult to want to crack the lineup. So you did, you know, after a few years, you've spent two full seasons in the American League, Cale. Then you made your NHL debut with the New Jersey Devils, and I think you got in a tilt in your second game. And then quickly during that season, you got traded to Calgary. Were you expecting that trade? Did it catch you off guard? What was your reaction when you found out you got traded to the Flames?
I couldn't believe it. I mean, again, here's my young, naive mind where I was drafted by a team. I'm going to work hard and do whatever I can. I'm going to be a lifer in this organization. Now, you know, I'd been through three or four training camps. I had only played eight games in the NHL and two full years in the minors without a game. So when I had that chance and then got sent back down, that was a tough drive back to Albany. But when I was traded, you know, I have a way of looking at things. Look, here's a huge opportunity, you know, and granted it was to go back home, which I hadn't played a game of hockey there since I was, I think, 17 and only eight games in the NHL. And then walking into that room and seeing the guys that were on the Flames roster, a lot of them that I had idolized growing up. Yeah. So that was, it was mind blowing, honestly. I don't know how else to explain it. Steve Chiasson, James Patrick, Gary Roberts, Theo Fleury, I mean, on. And here I am, and there's a jersey with my name on it. So what a huge honor. And really to break into the NHL at home, what a tremendous, tremendous thrill for me and for my family and friends.
Also, looking back on it, were there any challenges with you going to your home city, you know, with that it goes along with, you know, asking for tickets and guys wanting to come here and go there? Was there any challenges you had to deal with?
The ticket thing, I took care of right away. You know, I took care of my parents, and I had a close group of buddies, and I let everyone know, look, if I've got tickets, I'll let you know. And that pretty much took care of that. Really the challenge, if anything, was internal. I think I put additional pressure that was, you know, just unnecessary at that time on myself. And there was that, look, you know, at that point of your career, you can take a lot. You can take the abuse, the punishment physically, but when it was filtering through to my family, you know, and if, say, I had a bad game and we lost and my dad would go to work, or, you know, my brother or sister would hear about, hey, if I got, you know, you get walked on a one-on-one and the guy goes and scores. Well, in Canada, of course, you guys, it's on every station. You see it three times and it's in the paper and everyone's talking about how brutal you played or how bad you played. That was a hard part because, again, personally, I can take it all, but I didn't like when it would affect my family.
And that's totally fair. And I think a lot of people kind of forget about the human aspect of it. And they're like, hey, you want to, because most players are more critical of themselves than anyone else is going to be. A media
sure.
fan guy says, hey, yeah, you got walked. You're like, thanks, Tips. Yeah, I know. It was,
yeah.
It was a brutal play, but your siblings or your parents definitely, don't need to answer to that. But Calgary was also where you became a regular NHLer. Cale, it's
yeah.
also you scored your first ever goal in the National Hockey League. I think I looked it up. It was like game 68 of your career between the Devils and the Flames. Trust me, Strutty took 135. He was rattled when we figured that out.
I think
so
it was 133.
68 is nothing, but you scored at home in Calgary.
Yeah,
and I don't tough guys. Like, explain that first goal.
Shorthanded. Oh, well, I remember it like it was yesterday. I don't remember a lot of different plays during my career, but, you know, first off, it was late in the year. I think it was March, towards the end of March. So, you know, the clock was ticking. And we were shorthanded. I don't know who changed, and I jumped out. I think Dave Gagne was carrying the puck up ice, and I just – someone yelled something from the bench, like, go, go. Because me being a defensive guy, I probably would have just went right back to the front of our net. But Gags made a play. Somehow I got it. Kirk McLean, five-hole shorthanded. And that was – that's right up there with, you know, first game in the league and getting drafted, your first goal. I mean, it's just, it's amazing. That feeling, if you could bottle that, I mean, it was one of the coolest experiences of my career. And to be at home in front of friends and family, it was just awesome.
And it's so funny because, like, the difference between one and two isn't that much, but the difference between zero goals and one goals is, like, massive.
I've never scored 50, I don't think, in my, if you added up all my goals in my career, but that would have, I'm assuming, feels like when those guys get their 50th.
Hal Sarkiel, Hal joins us, a longtime NHLer, now member of the Arizona Coyotes front office. Hal Sir, you know, Theo Fleury, you played with him for a number of years in Calgary. Just talk about, you know, how that guy got, accomplished what he did in that smaller body he had.
He was literally an, like, I idolized him, you know, from how he played, fearless, the numbers he put up. You know, first, I think it's crazy that he's not in the Hall of Fame. I really believe that for whatever reason, someone needs to sit down and take a look at his stats. And back in the day when he played, and it was prison rules, you know, and just look what he did. He backed down from no one. He put up numbers whenever they needed it. And my time in Calgary, that team, he carried us on his back, you know, and everything that later we all knew that came out that he was dealing with and how he handled it and how he put the team first, you know, to play for on a team with a guy like that, with a captain like that. I'll never forget, too, walking in, you know, we played, it was my first game as a Flame in Edmonton. You know, I know I can't say what he said, but it was like, look, if you can't get up for this game, you're playing for the wrong effing team. You know, and that just threw me right over the top. I was already so fired up, having watched all these Battle of Alberta games. But that's just the way Theo was, and he brought it every night. And you talk about skill. He's probably one of the most skilled guys I ever played with.
And he made it look so easy, because I played with him later in Chicago. And, like, you know, I knew that he went to the front of the net and all that, but I didn't respect the high level of skill he had and what he was doing around that net, because there's a purpose to everything. He's not just like me plowing to the net and push everyone into the net to score, right?
Yeah, he really was. He was, you know, these guys, I can't help but think about how they'd be in today's game. I mean, imagine, again, looking at his numbers and his skill set, what he could have done today if no one was hanging on to him and breaking his back in front of the net. Like, all those hard areas, you know, going there at any size was tough, but doing it at his size, game in, game out for all those nights, yeah, just remarkable.
Kale Hulse joined. And when you have a guy like that, Kale, because you know you knew your role. You've talked about it. You knew your role, defenseman, and you play physical and you play tough. And when you had a guy like that who was willing to sacrifice himself, going everywhere, did you almost have even more of a big brother? Like, if anybody touched him, like, man, I want to kill that guy?
Without a doubt. And it wasn't, I mean, it was just, it was like my duty. I mean, he had done so much for our team, for the city, for the organization, for all those years, that without a doubt, and it wouldn't have mattered who, you know, it's just that he's doing it. The least you can do is try and match that. And then absolutely, someone touches him or anything, you know, to a man, you got to get in there and protect your leader.
Hulser, eventually you move on to the Nashville Predators. What was it like joining a team that was not too far removed from being an expansion team in a new city and trying to break in hockey there?
It was a cool experience. When I got down there, that was only their third year in the league. So, you know, of course, having played there as a visiting team, you know, you learn a lot about how new the game is to people. But once you're there, and I was a Predator, it was cool to see how the city had embraced the team and the sport and really not knowing anything about it. I'm telling you, I had questions. People would ask, what do they call that red line in the ice? Oh, that's the red line. I mean, I'm not kidding. We were getting questions like that, but people were really intrigued by the sport. You know, it was, of course, totally new. And again, it was our third year and we weren't a very good team. But they came out, and the honeymoon phase wasn't over, so we had great crowds. And it was just, it was a great transition, too, to be coming from being under a microscope in Calgary, in my hometown, to going to Nashville where you're totally anonymous.
Well, I would think, you know, after being in the league, and especially as a guy in your hometown, that is the one benefit. That the team wasn't necessarily as good right away, but you have that as a guy now established as an NHL player, where you can play hockey, it's intense, but then, you know, if you go to the bar or you just walk around town, no one's giving you any grief.
See, and I enjoyed that aspect of it. And, you know, everyone's different. Some guys need to be, you know, the show, and some guys feed off of having everyone know who they are and pointing at them or whatever. That I never really cared for that. I liked Nashville for that reason. And when I came here to Phoenix and played, it was one of my better years in my career for that same reason. You know, it's hockey's not being shoved down your throat through every news outlet and in the paper. And I'll tell you, it takes a lot of the sting out of having a bad game or bad practice when you leave the rink and it's sunny and 75 degrees. There's something to be said about that.
Yeah, it's a little different than minus 30, that's for sure. Now, also, you joined the Phoenix Coyotes, and maybe talk about Shane Doan. And do you feel he gets the maybe the respect he deserves for the type of player he was because of where he played for, you know, pretty much his whole career, which is Arizona?
I think, you know, first off, there's only very few guys that you get to play with that really leave an impact, from my experience anyways. You know, Theo, we talked about, Jerome Iginla and Doner. They left that same impression with me. All the numbers and everything they accomplished in their career, to me, what's even more impressive is the type of people they are. And, you know, Doner, what he has done for hockey in Arizona, what he did for this organization, the type of person he is, 100%, he is not given the credit he, I think, is due. You know, everything he accomplished here, and no disrespect to the guys he played with, but, you know, there were some pretty thin rosters on a lot of those years he played, and he still found a way to put up numbers. And again, but he was like Theo in a lot of the same respects, where he carried the team. You know, Doner carried the team. He left money on the table. He could have went elsewhere and chased a Stanley Cup. But, you know, this was his town, his team, and he put up tremendous numbers. And you talk about character and pride. You know, I challenge you to find someone that doesn't care as much as he did.
Now, Cale, we always like to get the other perspective at times, because Strud's a great storyteller, sometimes a fabricator of certain things. Do you remember when you and Strud got in a tilt? What is your version of what happened? Because I watched the fight before you came on today.
It was, you were in Vancouver, I think, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. See, and who was coaching there? Was it Keenan?
I think we had Mark Crawford at that point.
Okay. So, look, I don't remember every scrap blow by blow. I knew, and again, it's funny talking about the Western League and stuff. You knew where guys came from, and you knew enough about them that I had a pretty good idea, okay, this guy's going to be tough and he's going to be a gamer. Now, I don't know who had the upper hand, and I'm not just saying this. I don't know. So if, Struds, if you told a good story and maybe you had your way with me, I'll go with it for now. Just let me watch the scrap, and then we'll come back on next week
to
talk about it.
He actually, in this case, Cale, he was pretty honest, because I watched it, it was pretty even, but, you know, no one won, no one lost. It was pretty even.
Well, and I think that's the difference too, between junior and playing pro. I mean, you know, I don't know if there's more than, you know, a handful of guys in the history of the NHL that had their way with everyone they fought, like most guys did in junior. So when you drop the gloves in the NHL, you know, there was a lot of tough boys. Struds is a big guy, strong guy. So you had to be careful, because if not, otherwise you get caught with one and the lights are out. So, you know, I certainly respected everyone that had that similar role as me, because it wasn't easy. You know, it's, I think back now and it's like, I don't know how guys did it, you know, and continually would do that and not playing much in the games and having to go out and do that, because it was not easy.
And one last one for you, Halster, and I agree with you, it was hard. Was there one, like, I had a couple of guys that I was pretty, really, I'm like, you know, I was scared to fight. Was there ever a guy that you were, as you're dropping the gloves or thinking about it, you're like, oh boy, this could be a tough one?
Well, there were guys that I never fought, thankfully. But again, when you're, you know, Tony Twist, Dave Brown, I never fought Proby. Because when I'm breaking into the league, you know, you think about this stuff now. I had Brian Sutter behind the bench.
Yeah.
And whether you get your bell rung or now, you know, concussed, I'm not going to tell my coach when I've got 65 games under my belt in the NHL that I've got a headache. Or I'm not, you know, it's like, hey, every chance, every opportunity you had to put a jersey on to go play, it was an opportunity to show your coach and your teammates that you belong out there. So of the guys I did fight, yeah, I mean, Owen Nolan a couple of times, he was tough. He just about knocked me out. Joey Koser early in my career, my first fight, Ken Baumgartner. I mean, you know, I think the first 2 years of my career, I was in awe of just, I found myself watching guys, whether it was during warm-ups or even as I'm sitting on the bench going, oh my God, that's Ty Domi. Look at that. That's Mario Lemieux. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But yeah, some of the big boys, I didn't drop the gloves with a lot of them, but you know, there were guys that were, you know, you could get hurt and get seriously hurt if you got into trouble.
Give me your thoughts on the 1997-1998 season with the Calgary Flames. You had a career high in goals. You had 27 points that year, Halser.
Yeah.
What was going on? And then how did the coaches just never give you the same opportunities after that?
You know what? Honestly, I think from what I remember, it was our team, again, wasn't great. We didn't I think I played actually some second power play time. And there was just, you know, I guess a sense of comfort in terms of, hey, okay, I've been through the league. I've played, you know, a little over a year now, and just feeling some confidence, you know. And I look, if I knew what it took to do that, I would have done it more than just 1 year. Maybe I would have had a longer career. So I guess ultimately I don't have the answer. But the coaches, they gave me an opportunity, and I do remember the following season, we had made some trades. So I think Smith came back to play, and I think Phil Housley came. So there goes the power play time.
Yeah.
And again, rightfully so. You know, I had a limited skill set, and given the opportunity, I put some points up a couple years. But look, when I look back at my career, the fact that I played in the NHL for 10 years and played over 600 games, I pinch myself.
And, Kale, one last one. What are you doing now?
Well, I've been down in Arizona since I signed here as a free agent. Beautiful wife and family, very blessed. I've been and had a great opportunity 6 years ago to get back with the Coyotes organization, and I oversee our alumni relations, where we've got an awesome group of guys that have raised a ton of money and putting it back into youth hockey. And worked, you know, in the office, not on the hockey side. And, you know, that's uncommon, I think, for most former players, but it's been tremendous learning about the business and what goes on, you know, in the office and not on the ice, and how integral the partnerships are with the organizations. And I've had success in giving my perspective, I guess, in certain meetings and building relationships with clients, and, you know, excited about what the future holds down here with the Coyotes.
Well, Kale, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it, and the continued success.
Hey, thank you, guys. I really enjoyed it. Stay safe up there, and let me get to the YouTube video of me and Strud the Scrap.
Yeah, you check it out. Feel free to send us your response on Twitter. We'll be looking for it. I did post a nice picture of your BMX career on Twitter for you.
Awesome. So, I got to check it out. Well, thanks again, guys. I really enjoyed it.